Our friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. Mike created the new Giza Dream bed sheets. They're amazing. I use them. I love them. You will receive 2 for one low price plus free shipping. Call 1-800-685-7221. Use the promo code Carter. Thanks for joining the Sarah Carter Show. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts on YouTube, iTunes, Spreaker, wherever you get them, Spotify. Get our podcast and remember to give us that 5-star rating. And you can get all of the links to follow me on social media at sarahacarter.com. That's sarahacarter.com, where you can get not only the links, but the latest stories. The latest stories are all there. And gosh, do we have a lot of stories up on our site today and this week? I mean, with the impeachment hearing and everything else that's going on in our country, even the fact that the Biden administration wants to cancel flights to Florida, domestic travel to Florida. It's like a battle with Governor Ron DeSantis now, who I think is a phenomenal governor and is doing the right thing. Look, today's show, though, is going to be special. I'm going to take you guys out of the swamp and into the stars. We are going to update you on everything we've been talking about with aerial phenomena, the UFOs, for all of you out there, old-fashioned, old-school, unidentified flying objects. You know that the government has been, and this is very serious, the government has been looking into a number of incidents in which these unidentified aerial phenomena or aerial vehicles have come in close contact with our military. And we have Luis Elizondo on the show again today. So you don't want to miss that. He has huge developments. He's going to be with us. And we have other folks that are going to be coming on and talking about this in future shows. But you really want to hear what Luis Elizondo has to say and what has been discovered in Russia. That's big, big news. We're also going to discuss the latest on the Biden administration's failure of a plan on the U.S.-Mexico border and what they have done to the Western Hemisphere. I wrote a piece at Fox News, foxnews.com. You can go there and read my piece. It's an opinion piece on the border, and I lay it out why this is dangerous for both the United States as well as our partners to the south, for the Mexican people, for the Guatemalan people, for the Hondurans. That border is a mess. And it's getting worse. And we're seeing thousands of people. Because why? Because the Biden administration has basically said, borders aren't real. They don't exist. We're going to give basically amnesty to everyone in the United States. And now the drug cartels and the human traffickers are taking advantage of that. And I'm going to explain why and how they do that. Also on this show, I mean, I got to tell you, I was a little bit sick to my stomach. And I know you all have been too, at how divisive and hateful we have all become and what we're seeing on the media. But what's worse is this Lincoln Project group. I don't know if you've all heard this. I don't know what you know about this group. You know, this is the Never Trumpers rhinos, right? George Conway was one of the founders of this group. He is Kellyanne Conway's husband, and also John Weaver, co-founder of the Lincoln Project, who was just busted and outed. He's married, he's got kids, and was busted and outed for basically sexual harassment. 21 complaints against him, 21 different men. There's also some allegations out there about somebody that was under the age of 18 that allegedly he was grooming, but didn't date until he was over 18 years old. There's all kinds of crazy sick stuff. But guess what's even bigger than that? I'm going to tell you how these Never Trumpers are helping the left weaponize speech and everything else for profit. How they raised a ton of money and then put it in their pockets off of their hate, right? And off dividing the Republican Party. But before we get there, with the Biden administration now in power, guys, the battle for the integrity of America is even a bigger fight. How can you make a difference? You can join AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. I talk about it all the time. I love this group. That's why they sponsor the show. I mean, we are on the same page, right? AMAC believes in values that have made America so great: faith, family, freedom. How do you not like that? And AMAC offers an alternative to just about every benefit that AARP offers, but without the liberal agenda. Stand with us by becoming an AMAC member today. I stand with AMAC, and I hope that you will too. I encourage you to join today at amac.us/Carter. That's amac.us/Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. The benefits of membership are great, but the cause is even greater. Join at amac.us/Carter. Join it today. Where do we start? Where do we start? Let's just start with what's happening at our border. This hits close to home. This affects all of us. Look, and it affects also the poor people, the desperate people that are trying to come into this country. There are good people that are being tricked and lied to, actually, by the drug cartels, and the human trafficking organizations. And it's being perpetuated by a failed policy that we have seen in our nation for decades. I don't know how many times I've written immigration stories about the border. They all feel the same. From the time I started in the early 2000s writing about our U.S.-Mexico border, the failures there, the national security implications of a porous border. You know, we have roughly 2,000 miles of border. That's from the Tijuana, right, estuary, which I've covered many, many times, all the way up to Matamoros, Texas, right, and past Matamoros, Texas. Nearly 2,000 miles of border. A lot of it, some of the land, is not easily passable, right? It's difficult terrain. It's mountainous. You have the Rio Grande Valley area where the river is very, very dangerous and many people have lost their lives. But I wrote an op-ed because I thought it was important that we point out that just within the month that Biden has become our president, they have already signed 9 executive orders. He's like signed off 9 executive orders overturning policies that President Trump had in place at the border. These are not policies that are against immigrants. I am telling you this because I go down there. I talk to the people. I've been to Guatemala many times. I've dealt with Guatemalan intelligence. I've dealt with Honduran intelligence officials. I've dealt with officials in Mexico. I've dealt with U.S. intelligence officials working in those regions. It is a very dangerous region. It is a very dangerous region and one that puts into jeopardy the lives of the people, those that are most poverty stricken in those countries. And there's also another real issue for Americans, a national issue, and the implications of that. And that is the criminals. There are criminals that traverse the border. Of course there are, because there's contraband. You've got people fighting for transit routes into the United States of America. These are routes that connect basically to our highways and byways. They want to be able to move their narcotics, their supplies, and human beings into our nation. And they fight. The reason you see the battles along the U.S.-Mexico border, if you go to Juarez, you see the battles of, you know, Sinaloa and Vicente Carrillo Fuentes cartel. Or if you go to Nuevo Laredo, you see Los Zetas and Sinaloa fighting. You also have, you know, the cowboys down in Arizona. You have issues with various families, Ariano Felix family, which is still operating inside Tijuana. You have all these different groups, right? And all the Beltran Leyva. I mean, I could go on and on and on. And they're looking to control that border. And then you have shadow governments because these people have amassed so much wealth, so much money, and so much power. So much power. They've like raised their own armies. Some of their weapons are actually, I mean, outdo our own federal law enforcement officials. I don't even know if you realize that a lot of times these drug cartels actually are listening in. Using drones to fly things back and forth across the border. They've actually, one of the jokes in Mexico every time I would go there would be that the biggest retirement plan for the military would be to become in charge of one of the units along the U.S.-Mexico border, because your retirement plan was basically the drug cartels paying you off to turn, you know, your head the other way or actually to participate in the movement of the drugs. So I wrote this piece. It's called Biden's Immigration Policy. This is how you embolden human traffickers and drug cartels. Thousands of migrants are fleeing from Central America to the United States border again on bus, foot, and train. They will do whatever they can, folks, to survive. But you got to understand that they are being recruited by these drug cartels. And you know what they're telling them? They're telling them that President Biden wants you there. And a lot of the young people, and I'm going to, you know, kind of wrap it up with this because it makes me so sad. But a lot of the young kids that are traveling alone, the unaccompanied minors, the people that are looking for their families again, young women are raped. They come across the border with STDs. Some of them come across the border pregnant. Some of them never make it across the border. And you know what? Their bodies are not found for years. And sometimes they're never reported. Sometimes they just disappear. And even now in the United States, with Biden's plan, shutting off catch and release, changing all of these policies, I'm talking to immigration and customs enforcement officials. I'm talking to border patrol officials. And you know what? They're not deporting the bad guys. So not only are the people being harmed coming across the border, but we actually have people in the United States of America being let out of prisons that are not being returned to Mexico, that are not being returned to Honduras, Guatemala, or wherever. They're being released back into our streets. Some of these people are child molesters. Some of these people have a number of DUIs. Some of these people are drug traffickers. And believe me, they're not minor drug trafficking offenses. They might be registered in the courts as minor drug trafficking offenses, but they are not. They are not. That's what they do to reduce the sentencing, right? These people are, some of them, and I've talked to sources who have told me, are meth dealers, you know, or they're working with the drug cartels and dispersing the drugs here in the United States. This is not just about, you know, some young kid, but hey, look, American kids, they'll end up in juvie for like their entire high school lives for selling pot. But some guy who sells crystal meth from Mexico spends a little bit of time in a prison here, and then they get kicked right back out into the streets and the offense is reduced. I just want you to think about that and think about how crazy that is. That is one of the topics that I care about a lot. And, you know, and I'm not going to stop talking about it every single podcast. I think I'm going to bring up something that deals with immigration and the U.S. border and our national security. But I would be remiss if I did not talk about impeachment. I know you probably are all sick of it. I hear people saying, I don't even want to watch the impeachment fiasco, the impeachment sham on television. And then there's those that absolutely believe they want to impeach, 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 like Maxine Waters said, right? Impeach, 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 no matter what. They've wanted to impeach President Trump since the beginning of his presidency. This is not even a surprise. They were going to find anything. They don't care. January 6th was horrible. It was a horrible day. So were all the riots in the United States, the burning down of buildings, the attacks on police departments. My gosh, what has happened to our country over the last few years? But no, President Trump and his rally are in the mind's eye and the target of the left. And they are using it. They are weaponizing it to divide our country even further, even further. More than you can ever imagine. I want you to listen to this clip. This is my good friend, David Schoen. He is representing the president. I think he is a phenomenal lawyer. We'll talk about Castor and his crazy opening later. I was not all about that. David Schoen has presented a very good case. This was David Schoen on my good friend Laura Ingraham's show. And I want you to hear what he has to say, and then we'll talk about that for a minute.
Ted, you talk about unity and healing. Showing that tape over and over again, the same slides and so on, and manipulated by them, does nothing for healing. It's the exact opposite. It's continuing to open wounds for the American public. And it is something that President Trump has condemned in no uncertain terms, the terrible violence that went on there. So there's not an issue about that. They're just hoping to drum up emotion and get their last shots in at President Trump.
And he's exactly right. This is... This impeachment hearing is a sham. It is unconstitutional. There is nothing that the president said that would have led people to an insurrection. Because, I mean, if you're thinking about an insurrection, even the planning of an insurrection, I mean, it was like it would need like an army, right? I mean, you have people out there reacting to other people. The president said, peacefully march. We can all peacefully march. We can go to Washington. Well, maybe not now, because now the left has barbed wired fence all around the Capitol, right? And oh, by the way, 25,000 National Guard troops who had weapons to protect our lawmakers because they need protection, right? I mean, that's what they're saying. They need to have barbed wire and protection but you're not allowed to have protection. You actually would, you would be one of those ostracized right-wing radicals if you believed that you should carry around an automatic weapon or if you should have a possession of an AR-15. You're crazy, right? Nancy Pelosi is allowed to have a big fence around her house, a big wall, a fortress. Oh, she's a millionaire. Wait, maybe even hundreds of millions, tens of millions of dollars. They've made a ton of money, being congressional members, because you know how much congressional members make, right? Right? I mean, it's like such a big paycheck. But everybody here on in the swamp on Capitol Hill, there's a problem here. And this situation, what we are seeing here, what we are seeing with impeachment, what we are seeing in Washington, D.C., I have said this over and over again. This is not about President Trump, folks. This is about you. This is about you. They don't want you to pay attention. They want you to be busy, too busy to even pay attention to them, right? Too busy to even see what's going on in our country. Too busy to ask the right questions. And the problem with President Trump is that even if you didn't like him, no matter what you feel about him, the fact that he got elected and that a good majority of the American people liked him and the fact that he was just like not in anyone's pocket and he just exposed the whole charade, the whole theater, is the reason why they are so angry and the reason why they are trying to shut President Trump down, because they want anyone else who's like him to really be reminded that they are not allowed at all to do what he did. That means run for office. Don't try it. Look what we're going to do. We're going to destroy your life and that of your children. And we are going to impeach you no matter what. Impeach, impeach, impeach. And we have our army on Capitol Hill to do it. Right? We do. That's what they're saying. Look, before I go any further, I want to talk to you about cybercrime. We all know we've been on lockdown. And guess what? Crime is still happening. But this time it's happening in the vast internet, right? It's called cybercrime. And they will literally go after your home title. This is about home title theft. Look, here's how it's done. The title documents to our homes are online right now. So all of our titles are online. A thief searches, finds your home title, and then forges your signature on a quit claim deed stating that you sold your home to them. Can you imagine just waking up one day and finding out that someone has forged your signature on a quit claim deed? Well, guess what? You don't have anyone to help you because he takes out loans on your home. Then they leave you in debt. And guess what? You won't know until you have a late payment or eviction notices arrive. Insurance does not cover you. I didn't even know this. I didn't even realize that insurance does not cover you. And neither do common identity theft programs. So you need to go to HomeTitleLock.com and you need to register your address to see if you're already a victim. And then use this code. Don't forget to use this code. Radio, R-A-D-I-O, to receive 30 free days of protection. That's code radio at HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. Now, I'm really excited. I'm going to be going to my friend Lou Elizondo in just a moment, but I did want to just bring up one thing really, really quick. And I wanted to talk about the Lincoln Project just really quick before I get him on, because I'm so infuriated by this. I'm so infuriated by the Lincoln Project. The Associated Press, these are the rhinos, remember? These are the rhinos I talked about at the top of the show. You got George Conway, you've got John Weaver and all of his problems now with all of his like guys that he tried to pick up on that are angry at him. You know, he basically was a founder of one of the founders of the Lincoln Project and apparently had a reputation for trying to give men, favors in return for sexual favors, things like that. That's allegedly what is the problem. He's apologized for that. He put it out there. He says he's gay. He was married. Whatever. There is an issue there. There is an issue there. But now the Associated Press, this is not me. This is the Associated Press. They did a deep dive into the anti-Trump super PAC, the Lincoln Project, and discovered that out of $90 million it raised, only a third of the money was used for direct advertisements against former President Donald Trump on cable and television. So basically, the Lincoln Project, this this like forensic analysis was done by Cantor CMAG with the AP and found that tens of millions went to exorbitant consulting fees and expenses by those working for this now disgraced group. And they're still going to tell you that they're doing this for you, right? Because they care so much about you. I just want you to think about that. That's the reason why this swamp doesn't want you taking a peek inside what's happening here. They want you to stay busy. They want us to go to the grocery store and, you know, work every day without questioning them. And they don't even know what a gallon of milk costs, but we do, right? We do. And they don't want you to pay attention to what's going on in Washington, D.C. They want you to be totally separate from what they're doing. They want to be the kingdom, right? The kingdom. No, I want to remind you again. This nation was built on the foundation that the American people, you and I, are in charge. They work for us. They work for us. We have to respect each other, but they work for us. And we need to lay down, you know, these are the rules. These are the rules when you work for us. And you can't abuse your power. And you are not the king of America or the queen of America, Nancy Pelosi. You know, you work for us. Do your job. Represent us, represent your constituents, and stop this crazy impeachment sham and stop behaving this way, because all they're doing is ripping our nation apart and ripping our people apart from each other. And that is no way. A house divided cannot stand, right? So, okay, without any further delay, I am going to bring on my great and good friend, Luis Elizondo. He is a real American hero. He's really working. I mean, I love this because he's taking us to other places. He's taking us to other parts of the world, new ideas, new thoughts. This is so important because it's the future of mankind. And probably one of the greatest discoveries of mankind will be to find out that we are not alone, right? We don't understand what that all means to us right now. We know we're on the cusp of something huge and great. Luis was the former director of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program at the Pentagon. You know, his story was explosive last year when it came out in the New York Times that the Pentagon continued its program into aerial phenomena. For those old school folks, it's UFOs, unidentified flying objects. And there's some new developments with Russia, and we're expecting some more documents to be released. So without any further delay, I'd like to bring on Luis Elizondo. So I know everyone's going to miss you because you're like actually not, they can't see your face, Lou. I can't see your face, but I did a second ago.
Well, everybody, I have something really cool to show you guys too at some point, maybe next time, but I've got some military training aids in front of me that pilots use to recognize enemy aircraft from 20 miles away. And it's a really good illustration for your audience to know just how trained our brave men and women in uniform are at identifying aircraft and their silhouettes. When people usually ask, well, could the pilot be wrong? Could they be misidentifying? It's always a possibility. But when you look at you know, just as an example, what I have in front of me, you begin to realize that it's really not very likely.
Describe the piece of equipment that you have and what it looks like, just for everybody who's listening right now, because I know that they would be interested in that.
Yeah, sure. I have in front of me some training aids that I received back many years ago when I was in the Army, and specifically in Korea. And they are training aids that were provided to pilots and intelligence officers in order to recognize foreign military aircraft in the skies. And it's like a deck of cards that you might be familiar with playing at home with the family, except for these deck of cards have very specific profiles of aircraft from all different angles. Typically they're updated every year to include the latest foreign technology and weapon systems that are out there. But these are the same training aids that we use to teach our helicopter pilots and our jet pilots and other type of aircraft operators in order to identify foreign and enemy aircraft, in some cases from 20 miles away. Our trained observers are truly, by definition, trained observers. And many of them are trained to a very high degree of standard that really minimizes the misidentification, if you will, of aircraft in the sky.
I think that's such a great point. And I was going to say, because there's so many people that say, well, maybe they're misidentifying it. Maybe this is an experimental aircraft that they're looking at. You've been on the show before a few times. I want you to go through the five observables, just so for the people that haven't heard you before, so that they understand. And, you know, and maybe, Luis, just a little bit about your background with the Pentagon and what the United States government, as well as other governments, we're going to talk about Russia in a minute, are looking for when they're talking about these five observables that are not anything familiar with the type of technology that we have on planet Earth right now.
Sure. At least that we know of. So a little background about my, fair enough. A little bit about my background. I spent my entire career in the intelligence community, working for the Department of Defense and other agencies. My background has been typically counterterrorism and counterespionage in the specific field of counterintelligence. Basically, what that means is that I spent a career trying to figure out what the enemy knows about us. Long story short, in 2008, I was asked to be part of a very small, nuanced program. At the time, I had no idea what it was. Later on, I think it became rather famous as the ATIP program, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. And it was a program that was studying and looking at UFOs. I know it's a bit of a hard pill for people to swallow, but the reality is that your government, our government, spent quite a bit of taxpayer money trying to figure these things out. We had data, very compelling data, that there were things that were in our controlled U.S. airspace, both abroad and here domestically, that were displaying performance characteristics, we'll just say, that are well beyond our current understanding or our current paradigm, if you will, of existing aircraft. That's a little bit about my background. In 2017, I left the department because of the over secrecy on this topic and the stigma that was not allowing my office to report this information that we were receiving up to the appropriate channels within the Pentagon. As far as the observables, you know, I'd love to take credit for it, but I can't. While I was in the ATIP program, there was a lot of effort to try to look at this problem from an intelligence perspective. And as a result, the office collectively, with the help of scientists and some mathematicians and some other folks and other agencies, recognized that there were five distinct observables that were typically associated with these anomalous vehicles, these vehicles that had the ability to perform in ways that, frankly, uncharacteristically, were well above and beyond any capabilities we had. And so the five observables may now, looking back hindsight, seem like common sense, but they really, up until that point, had never really been, if you will, categorized this way. And the five observables, the first one is instantaneous acceleration, the ability for an object to go from point A to point B and possibly point C in a very, very, very rapid manner, well beyond the healthy limitations of anything biologically to withstand, and certainly beyond the material science capabilities that we had at the time and have currently. Mm-hmm. The next observable is hypersonic velocity. Hypersonic velocities are those speeds that are described by definition as Mach 5 or above. To put that into context, the SR-71, which is still one of the fastest aircraft on the planet, can do about 3,200 miles an hour, and still not really considered truly hypersonic velocity by definition. There's brief moments where we have certain, like, for example, the space shuttle can do it, but there's very few vehicles we have, military vehicles or civilian, that can fly that fast.
The third, I was blown away before you go there. I want to just go there real quick because I was blown away by the fact that, you know, at these hypersonic speeds, when you talk about it, we just think of like a craft, or we think of like a plane, or we think of like some type of vehicle that can move really fast, but we don't realize like the human body cannot withstand those kind of G forces, right? I mean, it's just like,
correct.
Even so, if something is moving that fast, yes. If someone's controlling it, who's controlling it? Because we can't handle that kind of G force.
Yeah, let me put that exactly. Great point, Sarah. So the SR-71, otherwise known as the Blackbird in the vernacular, was an aircraft that we used to spy on Russia. And this was an aircraft that at 3,200 miles an hour if you wanted to make a right-hand turn or do a U-turn, it would take you almost the state of Ohio to accomplish that. So certainly if you wouldn't expect a vehicle that's traveling that fast to be able to do a 90-degree turn instantly. Obviously, it would liquefy anybody or anything inside of it because of those G-forces. We're talking G-forces in some cases well north of 700, 800, 900 G-forces, whereas the human being can withstand about 9 G-forces for a very short period of time. So you're absolutely correct. And so that's why those two observables are fundamentally so important. The third observable is low observability. It's hard to see these things both with the naked eye and, of course, with electro-optical equipment such as gun camera footage and even radar. We keep getting these weird nonsensical returns when we shoot a radar frequency at it. So the third observable is a bit of an oxymoron, but it's low observability. The fourth observable, which is very important, is transmedium travel. This is the ability for a vehicle to operate in multiple different environments while still maintaining its original performance characteristics and design characteristics. So what does that actually mean? Well, a plane looks like a plane because it has to fly in our atmosphere. A rocket looks like a rocket because it flies in a vacuum environment. And a submarine, which doesn't look anything like an airplane or a rocket, looks like a submarine because it has to operate underwater. And any time you want to have a vehicle that can perform in two different environments, there's always a sacrifice that's required. There's some sort of performance sacrifice. So, for example, you don't expect an F-16 fighter plane to be able to float on the water like a boat. And if you wanted to, then you would make a seaplane. But as you know, a seaplane is neither a very good aircraft nor a really good boat. It's always a compromise. And yet the things that we are able to record and see are able to operate in our atmosphere, are able to operate in low Earth orbit and potentially seemingly underwater without having to change their design or performance characteristics. So that's a significant game changer from our perspective, from a national security perspective. And then the last observable is, I guess you could call it positive mm-hmm. lift or in the vernacular anti-gravity, because right now there's only three fundamental ways we know how to defy Earth's gravitational effect at a large scale. And the first is what everybody is usually familiar with, which is flight. Like an airplane has wings, it creates lift and therefore it can fly. The second way is through sheer ballistics. I can blow something out of a tube with enough force, mm-hmm. enough energy, where it will go up to a certain altitude and then come back down to Earth. And that's very synonymous with a mortar or a ballistic missile or something like that. You can even do it, you know, throwing a baseball if you want in the air and get the same effect. Whereas the last way we know how to do it is through buoyancy, lighter than air, hot air balloon, right. Think of helium. So you're looking at air density, and you can, if you have something that's less dense than our atmosphere, you will float. And yet these things have no engines, no cockpits, no wings, no control surfaces, nothing that we would typically associate with being able to fly, and yet these things have been recorded being able to fly quite easily in our atmosphere and potentially low Earth orbit and again underwater. So this is a new frontier for us. We're finally to the point as a government we recognize that yes, these things are real. Thanks to the help of people like you, Sarah, the stigma and taboo has been minimized, where now our elected officials can receive classified briefings. And in fact, to the point now, there is an official UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, that has been established and is directly under the purview of our Deputy Secretary of Defense. So we are taking this seriously as a country. And it's not only our country, too. There's many other countries. Your listeners might be surprised to learn that have been equally invested and interested in this topic as we are now.
Well, one of them is Russia. And you know, this is very interesting to me because there recently have been some videos released, Russian generals discussing this in particular, discussing the fact that the Russians are watching these same objects, the aerial vehicles, this aerial phenomena. And I want you to listen to this first clip I have here. And I know you've obviously heard them before, but I want to get your take on what Russia is doing here, how their program may be different than our program. And, you know, curiously, this is something that neither governments appear to completely understand. And will we ever work together with other governments to try to figure this out? Or is it a race for each individual nation? I want you to listen to this clip right now.
Because the flying saucer is literally stuck. I watched the materials of the pilots who encountered this phenomenon. However, information about UFOs remained in the archives of the Secret Services. In the 18th Air Force General Vasily Alexeyev, the leadership of the Air Force, ordered to record any information about mysterious object. All the collected data was sent to the Air Force Research Institute. This works continued methodically without a break for about 6 months.
That's incredible to me. I mean, all of this.
Yeah, it's pretty compelling.
It's very compelling. What's your take on why? Look, a lot of people are saying the United States is talking about it now. Russia is coming out of the UFO closet now. They're talking more about this. We're seeing other governments around the world speaking more openly. We know that there have been French physicists that have for a long time been asking for the United States and other major players to talk about disclosure. That means admit that there is something out there that people are seeing, that people are not crazy, that there is something there. What is happening right now, you think, that is causing this kind of speedy, I don't know if it's speedy, but maybe this move towards acceptance, right? This move towards acceptance for all mankind.
Well, I think, Sarah, we're at a point where the cat's out of the bag. You know, there's a point where you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube once you squeeze the tube. And I think the evidence has become so overwhelming now, and the proliferation of personal devices that anybody and everybody now is beginning to record and post these, some of these very, very interesting videos. And I don't think it behooves any government at this point to try to keep a lid on this. I've mentioned this before. This is a conversation that's not like fine wine, where the longer you keep a cork on it, the better it becomes. I think it becomes an issue. I think it becomes a liability once a government and its people realize these things are real. And if there's a government that then decides to squelch or continue to, if you will, keep in the proverbial closet this conversation, it actually runs against the interests of the government, because then people will begin to start questioning the motives and the sincerity of the government. I think you make a great point. It's not, I mean, we can look back in the last couple of months where Japan officially and formally and very publicly had requested a bilateral relationship with the U.S. government for the express purposes of sharing UFO related information. And I think in the headlines alone, if you look at just this week, there's the Harvard, very senior Harvard professor, very, very well respected, named Avi Loeb, who had a very controversial theory at the time about the Oumuamua, if you will, interstellar object that came into our solar system as being some sort of intelligently controlled probe. And he's not alone. So it's not just foreign countries now and their intelligence services, but it's actually world-renowned academics and scientists that are now stepping forward and saying, hey, you know what? There is enough information out there where we probably need to start taking this pretty seriously.
I thought that was really fascinating, especially with the Harvard professor. It was a sale. They believed it was a type of space sale, right? That was collecting data, that's one of the theories, and that it came from outside of our solar system. He even wrote a book about it.
Correct. Yes, it had a very, what's interesting is when you look at a space object that is coming into an orbit or of the Earth, or in this case, coming into the solar system, they have very predictable paths, if you will, because of the trajectory and some of Newton's laws, obviously. You can, if you can catch an object moving in space, you can predict where it's going to be. And yet here was an interstellar object that was apparently changing right before our eyes some of its trajectory, as if it had some sort of intelligent control to it. There was some interesting design nuances as well. When I say design nuances, I'm going to be careful what I say here, but physical characteristics of this object that also made it very unique. It wasn't a typical, if you will, roundish asteroid. It had a very right. unique shape. It had a very unique trajectory. And by many accounts, it appeared to be intelligently controlled.
Well, that's interesting because I remember seeing the Harvard professor speak about this, and he had said that we had actually been working on something similar. This type of space sail was something that physicists were working on, which made it incredible when they realized what they were actually looking at. If what they were seeing is accurate, if it is being controlled, as he believed, by intelligence, this was something that scientists on planet Earth were actually hoping to do one day. I mean, this is, you know, it's a real project. It's a way of traveling in space differently than what we are accustomed to.
Correct. That's referred to as the solar sail, in which solar photons sails, of light over a given time will provide enough energy to propel you through interstellar space at very, very fast velocities. And the models that we predicted early on when we were trying to develop this technology were actually witnessed by the Harvard team, by Oumuamua. So you're right. It is very compelling. Of course, the jury is still out whether or not this was indeed some sort of extraterrestrial probe, so to speak. But there is certainly some very compelling data suggesting that may be the case.
Let's listen to this next clip. This is another clip. This is also a Russian military senior official talking about what they believe their military officials have witnessed and their military personnel have witnessed when it comes to UFOs.
Everything was recorded, everything was timed, and according to the program that was drawn up, and I will tell you that it was well drawn up, it provided not only for the fixation of UFOs, we sometimes incorrectly call them flying objects, because these unidentified objects are not flying, just appearing and disappearing.
That was really interesting because I did call it UFOs for people out there, old school, but they are appearing and disappearing. And that's something that you had talked about with me on our last episode. And just so all of you out there understand this, it's so incredible to me. It's such a mystery, but could you talk a little bit, Lou, about how like they show up and then they disappear? But you also talked about the fact that it's about the speed, the rate at which they are moving, which may be different than what we're seeing, like as far as time frames are concerned. That's why we think they disappear and show up, but it's actually at the rate in which they're moving that's playing a game with what we're seeing.
Yeah. So, you know, we as human beings live fundamentally in a three-dimensional space that we're all very comfortable with. And there's three axes of movement. You have what we call in physics x-axis, y-axis, and z-axis. Or in the vernacular, I can go forward and backwards, left and right, and up and down. And time tends to be the function of a fourth dimension, if you will. And that is the universe in which we are comfortable and that we are used to living. But thanks to the efforts of folks like Einstein, we now realize that space-time, the very fabric of space-time, is indeed flexible. It's malleable. It's not linear in the way that we perceive space time. And so there is much research going on right now that if you have the ability to just, let's say, temporarily insulate yourself from the effects of Earth's gravity, by definition, you'd have to insulate yourself from all the effects of Earth gravity, not just that sensation of being pulled down to the surface of the Earth, but the warping of space-time that the Earth exhibits on its surrounding, that in itself would be insulating. You would no longer feel the effects of that. And so if you were able to somehow create this bubble around you that insulated yourself from the effects of Earth's natural gravity, then what may appear to an outsider as this incredible rapid movement, almost, if you will, riding the wavetops of space-time, this jerkiness in movement, in fact, really isn't so. If you were inside this bubble looking at the rest of humanity, you might notice us all moving in slow motion, in fact. And so what appears to us as this incredible velocity, hypersonic velocity, instantaneous acceleration, et cetera, is really just a localized, potentially a localized area of space-time that is insulated from the natural environment around it. And so therefore, you are operating in a different space-time construct, and not even by a lot, even a little bit can really change the perception from the outside. So it may very well be a result of the propulsion being used, potentially the science or the technology that's creating this interesting observation.
I think that's absolutely one of the big reasons is all of these answers, these little bits of information that you're sharing with us is something that we didn't even understand 10 years ago, right? Most people, when you think of an aerial phenomena or you think of a UFO, it wasn't taken seriously. You're right. It wasn't taken seriously decades ago. And then people would say, no, I saw something, or military officials would report it. How important, though, when you think about this, you think about the fact that the United States government has, a program to study this. When you're trying to tell just the regular Joe, the regular person out there that may not believe this, that may have bought into the whole, conspiracy idea, this isn't true, this isn't real. What do you say to them to convince them that this is something that absolutely must be studied? And if we don't, I mean, it could be to the detriment of our species. I mean, we really don't understand what's going on here, right?
Yes. Well, that's a great question, Sarah. And that's a question really that everybody's going to have a slightly different answer. I would probably first, when I'm engaged in a conversation like that, I would say, do you believe in sea monsters? And most people would say, no, we don't believe in sea monsters. You know, I believe in science and nature. Well, 150, 200 years ago, sailors used to report these giant squid, these kraken in the ocean. And a lot of people thought they were fairy tales. And then lo and behold, we find out there is something called the great squid of the Pacific, which can get to these enormous proportions. And it wound up being true that there are indeed sea monsters. The only difference is that we call them blue whales and great white sharks and giant squid. So what was pseudoscience before, what was paranormal before, is now we realize is really just quite normal. And by that same definition, one can use the argument that everything by scientific definition in nature is considered paranormal until it becomes normal, until we do understand the science and physics involved. Let's not forget that we spend millions of dollars in the past with SETI trying to find, by definition, search for extraterrestrial intelligence. We spend millions, if not billions, with NASA to do the same, to find microbial life on Mars and some of these moons, out in the asteroid belt. Is it really that much of a stretch that if the scientific community is convinced there is life out there, that it might not already be here? Is it possible? Right. Well, there's enough information now that I think anecdotally that we can say with some degree of certainty that, yes, it appears that there is something here on our planet that we don't really understand yet.
This is what's really intriguing to me. I want to play this last clip. This clip, the Russians are claiming that they have a capability of doing something that actually allows them to visualize and see this object when they do it. The general doesn't explain what the Russians do, but they basically say they have a way of luring it so that they can visualize it. And then I want to get your take on that.
Suddenly, a flying saucer appeared, which began to quickly approach the plane and hovered over him. The flying saucer was not just hanging over the plane. It sometimes descended from the side, from the bottom. In other words, it examined the crew. Attempts to increase the speed by changing of aircraft attitude to go away did not lead to anything, because the flying saucer is literally stuck. I watched the materials of the pilots who encountered this phenomenon. However, information about UFOs remained in the archives of the secret services. In the 18th Air Force General Vasily Alexeyev, the leadership of the Air Force ordered to record any information about mysterious object. All the collected data was sent to the Air Force Research Institute. These works continued methodically without a break for about 6 months. Everything was recorded, everything was timed, and according to the program that was drawn up, and I will tell you that it was well drawn up, it provided not only for the fixation of UFOs. We sometimes incorrectly call them flying objects, because these unidentified objects are not flying, just appearing and disappearing. Experiments were conducted very successfully in order to cause them to appear.
In order to cause them to appear. That's very interesting to me. Do you believe what he is saying? And if so, what is your guess on what that might be? What could the Russians have done?
To answer simply, yes, absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly with that assessment. The problem is the how. And I want to be careful not to say too much, and only because I still have a security clearance, and I think there may be efforts underway to continue that line of experimentation. But we do know that based upon our observations that there seems to be some commonalities associated with these UFOs. And then when I say commonalities, I mean from a national security perspective. I don't mean necessarily, you know, like your neighbor said, grandma saw some lights in the backyard or something, which could absolutely be true, by the way. What I mean is the information that we have collected about these craft, these vehicles, whatever you want to call them, these UAP UFOs, there seems to be some commonalities. And one of them is a keen interest in our nuclear capability. When I resigned from the Department of Defense, I actually put in my resignation memo that some of the concern we have is that there appears to be some sort of interest in our nuclear technology, and not just nuclear weapons, but nuclear propulsion, nuclear energy, any type of technology that's associated with our nuclear strategic capability. So that's one of them. And I suspect that, you know, with a clever group of folks, you could probably come up with ways to test that theory and see if there's a way to quote unquote lure these out.
That's very
but
interesting.
Beyond that, I probably shouldn't say much more.
So close yet so far away. I feel like we're almost there. but so far away. I think one of the questions too that I have, right? And just going to you as an expert is, do we feel that these could very well be very real threats, or do we think that maybe whatever is observing us is here for, I don't know, maybe for purposes that are not threatening, either observing or assisting? Do we have any idea?
Sure.
And has anyone ever mate said that you actually believe, because I don't want to forget this question, that has made contact or has any type of direct contact with whatever's there for whatever purpose? I don't even know if that's like by radio, in person, some kind of messaging that happened to the government. Is there any way or any reason to believe that whatever this is has tried to communicate with us?
Well, I have been asked that question before in a formal capacity, and my answer has always been consistent. It depends on what your definition of communication is. You know, one can argue that we're having wonderful communication right now over your podcast program, but communication isn't necessarily always verbal. There's ways to communicate intent and feelings with one another that can be simply as that of a hand gesture, right? Well, we are in a military. We do a show of force against a potential adversary. we're not talking to them on the radio. We're just flying a bunch of combat aircraft in and around their strategic equities. And that is a form of communication, right? It's not necessarily verbal. It's not necessarily in a way that most people would maybe describe as articulate, but it's effective. And so I think we need to have an understanding of what communication is and understand that sometimes when you're speaking to somebody in a foreign language, you won't understand them and they won't understand you, and yet you're trying to communicate. I think that if there is something that is being provocative in our airspace and coming up close and personal to our military assets and equities, then yes, I believe that is a form of communication. Now, are we sitting down at the table and having PowerPoint briefings and writing memorandums of agreement? I don't think that's the case. We never really saw that as being the case in ATIP when we were in ATIP. But truth be told, there was speculation that there may have been other programs in the past that were doing what we were doing in ATIP and had different data. So, you know, I can only speak from my perspective and in my time at ATIP. I certainly wouldn't want to speak authoritatively for the entire U.S. government, you know, about anything and everything. As far as threats, which is a different question you asked me, do I think it poses a threat? Well, yes and no. What is your definition of a threat, right? Again, going back, and I'm not trying to play word games here, but it's very important because from a national security perspective, in this case, the Department of Defense and the intelligence community, a threat can only be validated once we understand two things, and that is capabilities versus intent. Well, one could argue that we've seen some of the capabilities, i.e. the five observables, but we still have no idea the intent. So therefore, the presumption must be or should be, from a prudent perspective, that anything with this technology has a capability to be a threat if it wanted to be. So we need to figure out what the intent is. There's a lot of other questions we need to ask ourselves before we can surmise if something is or is not a threat. And I tend to come from a community where we'd rather be safe than sorry. We presume everything is a potential threat until we are sure it is not a threat. I'm not saying that's the right approach, but that was our approach. And that's an approach that I think is prudent.
Well, they're not showing up and teaching us how to grow better agriculture, you know, better plants and vegetables, and, you know, how to better educate our right. children. I mean, if they're flying around, you know, nuclear plants, I mean, I would be concerned. I'm just like, hey, you know, why are you doing that? Are you worried about us, or are you testing us out, you know? And before I let you go, I want to ask you a couple more questions. The last one I'm going to leave up to you, but this question is important. There has been now a call to declassify, and I think we're within that 180-day period, a lot of information on the UAPs, and that is coming up. What do you expect to see in those documents, those intelligence documents that are going to be declassified on this? And how much do you think will be declassified?
Holy smokes. So let me see if I can do some expectation management here. that report that is due to Congress from the Director of National Intelligence is due approximately in 132 days. That means they have a requirement to provide both classified information and a classified annex that will probably be provided only to those members on the committees. And then there will be an unclassified version for general consumption. The question is, what is going to be in the report? Well, I want to be very careful here. If you were to ask me and I was in charge and I had the ability to influence the system, what I would first of all propose is give them another 180-day extension. Now, I know that's not a very popular thing to say right now, but I'm a strong proponent of doing things the right way. There is a difference between doing things right and doing things right now. And I prefer to do things right. And I don't think the current construct of the task force has the ability to answer completely the mail for the Congress. I mean, it takes longer to build a house in some cases than it does to provide this report to Congress. So it's no easy feat, and you have to have the right amount of resources and personnel and access
to answer the mail. And the last thing you want to do is provide an incomplete report to Congress and the American people. So I think what I would do is, first of all, request an extension. And then what I would do is, rather than have a task force, which is by design a temporary capability, I think I would probably start to look at creating some sort of enduring capability, some sort of capability that's going to be long term, that's going to include an entire whole of government approach, not just DOD, not just the intelligence community, but everybody, to include Department of Homeland Security and FAA and even perhaps NOAA, everybody and anybody who has a stake in the game. I think we need to have our best and brightest scientists and academics involved. And yes, even our international and foreign allies, because we are now realizing, as you just heard with the Russians, this is not a U.S. phenomenon. This is indeed a global phenomenon. And we know that our foreign adversaries are just as interested in this topic as we are. So we probably should have a broader conversation about this.
I absolutely agree with you on that. I think this is definitely an issue that affects all of mankind, and probably will be one of the greatest, if it's not already, greatest discoveries in the history of our existence. You know, answering the question whether or not we're alone, whether or not it's just us in this vast universe. I've never believed that myself. I've always believed that that we are not alone, that there is something else out there. So this will be very interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how, with all of the issues that we have plaguing our planet, if we could just agree on one issue, if we could just figure out how to take care of ourselves as a planet, right? As human beings, how do we protect ourselves? How do we work together? This may be the one issue that will connect us all, at least I hope. I'm going to leave the last question to you, because what is it that you hope people take away from this? What is it that you hope for the future of mankind based on, I believe, this research and this focus on the UAP program?
My hope is that we have the courage to recognize that this topic should not be a political topic. It is a topic that involves humanity. And as a result, that I think this is a discussion that belongs under the providence of no organization, institution, government, or religion. I think it is an inherent human question of whether or not we are alone. And we have been asking that question ever since the time began. And it is a natural question for us to ask. And we must ensure we do not make the mistake of politicizing this topic. Because as we know, politics oftentimes can get in the way of fair-minded, rational discussion on all sides. And I'm not just talking about the left or the right, but I'm talking about, you know, the middle and up and down and everybody, la-di-da-di. So I would ask that people take a moment to consider the information that's being provided. And also, let's not jump to any preconceived conclusions or narrative, that we need to take the time and give our leadership the time, doesn't matter who's in office, to try to help us figure this out together. And I think we're getting there. I see Congress working in a way, particularly on this topic, unfortunately not in some of the other areas, but in this topic, there seems to be bipartisan support. And that to me tells me there's hope, that there's hope in the system, and that we can, at the end of the day, we can all agree, you know, that probably on 80% of the issues, this being one of them, we can come together. We don't have to be divisive. And I think you're helping that, Sarah, you and other folks in the media who decided to pick up the baton and risk an enormous amount of personal and professional credibility to have this conversation. And, you know, I think history will in the end smile upon folks like you in the media who have been willing to take up the challenge and have the conversation despite, the stigma and the naysayers and whatnot. So to very much that degree, my hat's off to you. I applaud what you all are doing.
Well, I feel the same way about the work that you do, Lou. And I think it is, you're right. It is the job of us to deliver the truth and to present the facts and the questions and all of that to everyone, to our country, to the people that are listening, not just to this podcast, but that are watching the news. It does no one any good to lie or hide or keep from people information that's so important to who we are. And, you know, about politics, I agree with you 100%. There's an exhaustion that is taking place in our country. And I talk to people all the time, whether you're on the right or on the left or up or down, like you said, or in the middle, there's got to be a point where we can work together. You know, we're still Americans. We're all, you know, hopefully fighting for the same things, and that's freedom and liberty and our great nation. And, you know, we can't move forward if we're stuck. And moving forward means really asking the tough questions and doing the right thing. And especially when it comes to subjects like this, I mean, I think we're on the forefront of something just so remarkable. I'm so happy to be alive in a time where we actually have the scientific capability to understand some of this stuff. And really, I think it's going to be enormously incredible changes in mankind and in our planet, maybe in the next 100, 200, millions of years from now. I can't even imagine what it would be like. But I look forward to bringing you back on the show and bringing your partner, Chris Mellon, on the show, you know, having him speak and others to talk about this. I'm excited.
He's far more articulate than I am. I think your audience, once they get a chance to hear him, he has incredible perspectives on this. And he's truly not just my friend, but just perhaps one of the smartest human beings I've ever had the honor to and privilege to work with. And he really is a national treasure. I cannot wait till your audience gets a chance to hear him. He's amazing.
Invitation is out there. I've told him. I know he's such a busy man, but as soon as he has a moment, I know he'll come on here on the show, and I welcome him. I can't wait to talk to him, Lou. He sounds like such a great guy, and he's got so much information. Wait till you all hear him. Chris Mellon is phenomenal, and he and Lou have been working closely together, and your show is amazing. Your show, tell everybody about your show, where we can see it, what's going on, you're doing so much work.
All due respect, Sarah, I don't like doing much self-promotion or plugging, only because I think it's a distraction from what we're trying to achieve. I appreciate it. We tried to make the show as elevated as possible. There's no scripting to it. What the audience sees is what they get. We did a couple of seasons on the History Channels. The show was called Unidentified. If they're interested in that type of information and they like what they saw, please know that we are continuing to have this conversation in a way that ensures transparency and collaboration and cooperation. So, I think there's more to come, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, great. Well, now I'm going to let you get
that opportunity
anytime. And, tell your family, thank you for letting me take your time a little bit today. And thank you for being with us. And thank you for enlightening us, because there's so much more I want to talk to you about. I know we're doing it little pieces at a time, but I think everybody got so much from this conversation, particularly with all of the new information coming out from Russia and from other places in the world and how we're working together. Thanks so much, Lou. I look forward to seeing you real soon.
Sarah, my pleasure. Thank you so much. Can't wait.
I don't know what else I could add to that. I know this was an intense conversation for many of you that have not listened to the previous shows with Luis Elizondo. I suggest you do that. You can find them all at The Sarah Carter Show. That's wherever you listen to your podcasts, right? You can go to iHeart, Spotify, Spreaker, iTunes, wherever you need to go. Go there, look up Luis Elizondo. I want you to hear the other two shows. I also interviewed Nick Pope. This is a subject I care deeply about. He is the former assistant defense minister of Great Britain that worked on, you know, this particular subject as well. Aerial phenomenon, UFOs. Look, this is going to be the greatest discovery in all of mankind. And what we are looking at now is something we do not understand. We can't put a word to it yet, but we can report to you what our government is doing and what our government is investigating. That's what I do here at the Sarah Carter Show. I care about all of you. I know it's been a rough time in America the last year and a half, but we're going to get through this together. Remember, here at the Sarah Carter Show, we are taking the story back. God bless you. God keep us safe, even from the aliens. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Weber, the CEO of the Association for Mature American Citizens. It's also known as AMAC. Explain the differences. What makes AMAC superior to AARP, beyond the fact that we don't agree with their leftist ideology?
What makes us so unique is that we truly do take our marching orders from our membership. Before we go out and about and advocate for any issue, we do consult with our AMAC members, and we do that through a variety of ways. But that really makes us very different. Where AARP stood in support of Obamacare, even though their membership was largely against, AMAC will stand in support of our membership. In addition, Sarah, we offer benefits. We offer benefits just like the AARP. Ours are better because we offer choices. For example, you can call AMAC for your Medicare, and we're not going to do a one-size-fits-all, one plan. The AARP endorses United Healthcare, whereas AMAC has its own trusted in-house licensed insurance advisors that are working for AMAC, stand for our mission of faith, family, and freedom, and then go about offering real choices. We do a lot of things like that that I think make us very different and make us, quite frankly, better.
Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm honored to have you and AMAC as a sponsor for the Sarah Carter Show. You know, for more information, folks, visit AMAC.us/Carter.